there a little bit. Just sorting out some details. The details is meant for the members of parliament. The one detail is that we are not meeting tomorrow. As I said, I wanted to give an opportunity to the department to go through the presentation in a very sober way, and so that you can get guidance. Now, next week we're supposed to start with the deliberations. We did promise that we could give the National Commission, the Interim National Commission, another opportunity after we've heard views from other people. Now, I just wanted to check with members of Parliament. What do you feel about that? Because I don't have them now, but we are going towards finalization. This is the last, today is the last presentation that we have. And then after that, we take the legal department to give us the presentation. And then we talk also the parliamentary legal presentation. And then we get into our own deliberation towards finalizing the bill itself. So I did promise that I would give an opportunity to the National Commission. Do members of parliament feel that they want that opportunity? I know it's a complex problem. David?
Chair, I would support the proposal that the Interim National Defence Force Service Commission appear again before the committee to discuss the bill. So I would support that.
You see, it gives you an opportunity to talk more to the issues that you have picked up over these few days. That's the opportunity I want to give. What do you feel, Honorable Khunovas? Make your point. I'll listen to you. Just think through.
Yeah, Chairperson, yeah, it's a bit difficult because I'm also a member of the Commission, but I don't see any harm if we have the time, if they can get a summary of the inputs, then maybe they would like to make a comment on that or give further inputs. So it can do no harm. In fact, it can be a good thing so that we can get their views as well on the views that has been expressed. So I will also support it. Give them a chance. That's no problem from my side.
I couldn't stop Honorable Holomisa yesterday to express a view. But I would have loved that view to be expressed through the commission as a collective. And I also think that Sandu made a very substantial presentation on the Constitutional Court, on the bargaining chamber. While we all say that the bill is not about that, but I do think that it does have implications for what goes on there. So that's why I was trying to say, let's consider and reconsider to give them an opportunity to look at the Sandu presentation and give them an opportunity to reflect on it and give us guidance that what do they say in relation to those particular matters. You see, when the deliberation starts with Parliament, they have no opportunity anymore to talk to us, you see. So that's why I was trying to say, can we give them that opportunity? So that when we go to the closure of the bill, nobody, you have not been covered, and we have made sure that at least the commission, because they were working on those different matters, is given that particular opportunity to talk to the issues that are in front of us. Honorable Mathieu?
Yeah, no, I was battling to to understand the debate, and that is why I was asking for clarity from my colleagues. I don't think it is an abnormality for us to follow that route. We can follow that route. The only concern that I have is around their participation in the public hearings, whether they do attend public hearings or they don't attend public hearings. Because whatever deliberations that we are going to enter into with them. They should be informed by the participation of people who participated in the public hearing. And if you are busy with a bill affecting somebody and that person is not even interested to understand what other people's views are, it gives you a concern. So if they do participate even in the public hearing, at least it will help us, because it will give us a mileage in the thinking around the bill itself.
You remember the bigger component of those that are leading the commission that said they are apologizing because we are going overseas. So we all agree that we give them that opportunity. The people that are here is, it's been always been the department's legal representative, which can give them more information of exactly what is going on. The people have assisted them to craft the bill itself. So I'm thinking that they're informed, you see. I mean, I can check with, where is the legal representative now? That. Are you with us in what we're suggesting? Yeah. You'll be able to give them a brief. Yeah. So that's the component that has always been part of us all the time. They have to do the final presentation. So I just thought that they can take the commission through, and then we give them an opportunity on Tuesday to do it. But from Tuesday onwards, we are getting down. The deliberations about the portfolio committee coming to get to grips with what has been proposed. So it means presentations from there are no more welcome at all. It's just a discussion amongst ourselves. Oh, it's just discussion amongst ourselves as members of parliament. I'm sorry. Now, what I'm saying is that we are just trying to get an agreement amongst ourselves as members of parliament to give an opportunity to the commission, the interim commission, to come back and speak to the issues that have been raised by the unions, so that we could substantiate that substantial document and some of the other concerns that have been expressed by different members that have come for the hearings. We want to give them that opportunity. And then I'm saying that from Wednesday onwards, we would see if ever the department is ready, and we would see if ever parliamentary representative is ready, and we start taking opinions from you people about what is exactly going on. And then after that, it's members of parliament, clause by clause, going through the bill itself, so that you could be able to agree and disagree on what is being proposed in the bill itself. Yes, sir.
Chairperson, must bear in mind, I don't see that the commission will be able to be to appear in front of the committee on Tuesday. The department is only, or the secretary is only going to make the compilation of the inputs. Say by Friday they finish. Monday is a public holiday. So if we want the commission to come, which I support, then it should be around about Wednesday, Thursday next week.
No, let's not fight about the time. That I can leave with me to sort out. Yeah. The principle I wanted you to agree upon is that, can I give the commission another opportunity so that you can be all at ease with what is happening. The one thing, member of parliament, we did take the response of the unions yesterday, but they had approached me again to say that they felt that they have not finished making their comments. They wanted to make some comments again today if they can be given an opportunity. Deputy, hello, are you going now?
No, I'm not leaving. I have to respond to the call of nature.
Okay, so who is going to say something on your behalf? Because I don't see your president today. Has he gone back to work?
Don't worry, I'll be going to go. No, I'll probably break it.
No, but you see, I've delayed my committee now. If you go and answer that call, we are going to proceed with our own decision. Please, make up your mind, what do you want us to do? Yeah. I can accept. Because we are trying to, you are eating into our own time, that you are asking us to give you an opportunity. I just want to, they said they wanted to make some comments today. That's why they have come back today. Now I wanted to consult with you, because if you agree, we can give them the opportunity before we start the program. as we have given it out today. Today we are supposed to deal with the Reserve Force Council. We've got a presentation by the KwaZulu-Natal Reserve Force, and we've got the Khoisan Kingdom. The delegation you see there, it's Khoisan. They are the ones that are going to do presentation. So, and then would, if we can work, we should be finished by 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock today. And then this is the last presentation that we're taking. So I just wanted to consult with the members of parliament. Should I give them the opportunity to make their last comment?
Chair, I would support giving the SASFU an opportunity to make a comment, and while they are making their comments, perhaps they will consider my request for an apology to South Africa for what happened on the Union Building in last year in 2009.
Sir.
But, Chair, I say that on a lighter note. My point about process, I have supported you in suggesting that the Commission appear again before the committee. My question to you would be, given the very substantial and complex nature of SANDU 2's document, and my understanding yesterday is that you were going to ask SANDU 2 to appear a second time. I might be mistaken, but I think we should consider that. But more importantly is the question of defense policy. Now, it seemed to me that the department's legal department were in a difficult position yesterday where they were explaining, they were interpreting the bill and explaining the department's policy. I think that we should also get the department to appear again before this committee to be very clear on policy aspects and what it is the department are trying to achieve with this bill. That's the one thing. And the second thing is to give us a costing of this bill.
The second one is not possible. Costing, we don't usually deal with it. It's more detailed. We'll deal with the aspect of the policy. But we should also be agreeing that that doesn't invite the minister to come back at all. We'd have to deal either the Secretary of Defense or somebody who deals with policy within the defense itself. So it doesn't, we must not open a channel that says the minister must come to come because usually the policy arrangements have been done by the ministry. But let me also give other members an opportunity, if you don't mind. So, yeah, that's right. So on the second one, we'll give SAS, is it SASFU alone? And SANDU 2. And then SANDU 1 is not here today. You are SANDU 1. Hey, I confuse you, man. SANDU 1, SANDU 2. Okay. Yeah. Zolineka Mokisani. Tato Mlange.
As one grows older, one becomes hard at hearing. So if people could raise their voices, we'll appreciate it because we want to be part of this meeting, some of us.
That's the role here, you see. These are military veterans and they are giving guidance. So please, let's all talk louder than think. Yes, I am. I'm shouting. Tatu Masia.
Yeah, Chairperson. Your comments was to say yesterday that during the time that we'll be deliberating on the bill, you would want them to be there so that from time to time, possibly, we can ask for their comments. Come again? No, I'm saying to SANDU, because SANDU is the one that presented a legal opinion.
Yeah.
I'm correct.
Yeah.
Yes. So I do not recall us saying that we will invite them to come and make another presentation unless if it was discussed with ourselves without us in a meeting. If it is that way, then I think, Chairperson, you owe us a request to do so. However, given the fact that the group that is here have already been allowed to to make their presentation. I think we will allow them, but we should not invite more other presentation after presentation.
No, I didn't meet anybody. That's why I come back and explain to you what's going on. People have approached me outside. The Sunday one, we all acknowledge that it's a substantive presentation that they did. We just want that Sunday too. There are many Sundays, I told you. Somewhere there. You see. So I then said we should give them, after we have heard a say about what exactly they are saying. You see. But I do think, as while the state law advisor was trying to be dismissive, I do think the constitutional court matter versus parliament will always, it will become a source, some that is going to confront us. We can't be dismissive. We can't, as a parliamentary, given the separation of powers, that would dismiss the constitutional court's view in the manner that he was telling us yesterday. I took it that is the department's point of view. The parliament would have to take a view of its own, that what do we do with this type of a development. And I'm saying those are separate discussions amongst members of parliament with our own legal representatives. You see. So the only part was like, if Sandu 2 comes back, but there are issues that you think that after you have looked into the report, you still want to get more clarity, I'll give you that opportunity to call them back and have more clarity from them. That's what I was saying yesterday. So this one, they just want to give us a small presentation of what they think is outstanding. I'll limit the questions just to give them an opportunity for them to present. That's what I do. Then there's an, on the policy issue, how do we handle
it? Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair.
No.
Okay.
Don't rush.
Okay.
Don't rush. You're not running any meeting. You're running your meeting outside here. Yeah, it's me in control. Yeah. We understand very well that soldiers live by orders, and I want you to live with that order that here I'm still in charge. Yeah. Okay. So what do we say about this issue? Who do we ask to come and help us with that policy arrangement? It can't be the minister at all.
Chair, I'm sure that the Secretary of Defense is back from Zimbali Lodge and will be available to brief us.
I don't know about that comment. Okay. Look, I'll ask Ratsomo, did you hear what we are saying? That we would need the National Interim National Commission to come and talk to us about that. The documentation is with the legal people. Before the legal people goes to total finality, we'd want that interim commission to come and talk to the different developments that have been said. One of their members is very consistent in this committee, Honorable Grunewald. We'll leave him to give them some of the information he has. And then after that, we would want to, from a just a more of a more presentation from the police side of it, to inform us that what is exactly, where are we going with this particular bill. No, wait. No. Please, can you stop disrupting the meeting? If you have given, you see the thing I was teaching you, you should have delegated your responsibility to somebody else there. So that if you have delegated, you could have gone out and come back. But it looks as if you are the center, you must say everything. So I don't have to get into that. You see, if you have delegated, we are going to start the meeting and we are giving you the opportunity. So those are the two things that we want you to help us with. So I did speak to you about the program. So if you do agree with Mandy to say that on Tuesday we won't start the deliberation, we can get, if the commission is ready, but one member of the commission says they might not be ready, but we will see what we can do on Tuesday or Monday, but make sure that they do some preparation so that they can come and do the last submission to the commission, to the committee itself. And the policy person, you can decide it's either the secretariat, the sector for who. We just have to come and speak to us about the policy direction and what should be expected towards the finalization of the bill itself. So that's what we expect from the ministry to organize on our behalf. And we'll communicate and tell me if you have been able to do that. Okay. So we're finished with your part. You know what is going to happen now. Okay. So deliberations are going to start later. Mr. Basson, as our legal representative after we've done all other submissions. We expect you to be ready to take up and give us guidance on all the things that would have been said, even what the department would have submitted. I would hope that we would exchange with you the information. This is Mr. Basson. He will be giving us his own opinion. Okay. No, man, it's the mic. I'm sorry, Daddy, man. If France Africans buy a good Africans, you can't come can so far to you soon. Net, I was just saying, in summary, what we are saying, Minister is going to prepare the National Commission, the Interim National Commission, to come for a last presentation, just to reflect on the things that we have discussed. And then on top of what the National Ministry will do, is to prepare somebody to come and talk to us about the policy that is related to the bills, that what is it that they want to achieve, what is the last contribution. That's what the preparations have to come back from the minister. The one part is that Sunday 2 would give them an opportunity if members of parliament feel that we should give them, which has been agreed now. But I hope members of parliament are going to read their particular submission. The legal people next week, Tata?
Next week.
No, today is the last day of your meeting. I know you have booked your flight, you can go back to Johannesburg. And then the legal people would be either Wednesday, Thursday, I hope they will be final with their own preparations and everything. And talking through the ministry will just indicate to us so that you can give you an opportunity to start presenting your own understanding and what is achievable in the bill itself. And then I say our own legal representative in parliament would have to be ready now with all the presentations, because we'd have to guide parliament in what is being expected of it. We like you in parliament. We understand that the lawyer of the minister, Ngobeni, doesn't like you, but we like you very much. You are doing a very good job. But that is not for today. Deputy President of SAFU, can I start with you? You're ready now.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Now, as the proceeding stands and the way we understand at this stage of the proceeding, it is the reserve force that is going to participate. Yes, we have requested to be here. Also, you know, to be ordered, to be afforded the opportunity also to get to...
Hello, my man. Hello.
Pardon?
We have a presentation or we don't have a presentation?
No, we do not want to make another presentation, but we were also concerned, you know, with the comments and the questionings that were made by especially the MPs yesterday, and maybe would like...
My brother.
Know, by
my brother. Here. My brother. Do you have a presentation or don't have a presentation?
No, I don't have a presentation.
Thank you very much. Leave that to me. I'm running the meeting. You're not running the meeting.
Okay, thank you.
Please, if you don't have a presentation, you don't have.
But can I say something, because there was one member, you know, there was a request, you know, from one member that I'm not sure whether I understood him clearly, that he expecting an apology from our side for the event.
My brother, can you focus on the bill and leave those one? If you don't, presentation, don't drag our time. Mr. Peter, do you have anything to say today?
Chair, I just want to inform you, good afternoon to you, Chair, and the honorable members, that we had submitted the legal opinion, Chairperson, that we have promised that it will be submitted. I'm hoping that Mr. Kevin Allender is via Mandy.
Oh, Mandy is shaking her head next to me.
Okay.
She has not yet.
I will recheck, because I did receive a copy, and we would appreciate if it could be circulated to the honorable members.
Yes, we'll,
thank you, Chair.
We'll gladly want to have it all. Even the lawyers and everybody is waiting for that opinion.
Should we send it to Mandy, Chair, or both also to
me? Is what I was saying, that sort it out with Mandy.
Thank you, sir.
Then all other people will receive it from Mandy. Okay. So you don't have anything to say more than that? Thank you very much, Peter. Your eagerness yesterday was like you wanted to challenge members of parliament. I know they are very sharp. They are very sharp. They will take you on. But thank you. Again, members of the union, we have considered some of your opinions. As you can hear our opinion, that says our own deliberations are going to start from next week. So it, what it means in the process of parliament is that when we start with the deliberation, we don't take any more submissions from there. It means that everything that you have wanted to told us, you have been given an opportunity to tell us. We have to consider your views. Usually it's not closed, but it's closed. Yeah. It's not closed, but it's meant for members of parliament. So it means that members of parliament from next week will be the sole people who will be looking at the bill itself, listening to the opinions that would be provided, and coming to conclusion about what they think about the different views that they have presented. So that's what is going to start. When you talk about the issues of deliberation, that's where we are going to be. You see. So we'll circulate every information that you have provided. Okay. Can I welcome the new people that are here? The Reserve Force Council, we have had you. Good morning, Dad. Can I have that? I did greet you people from the media. Good morning, people from the media.
Pardon?
Chantel, good morning.
Morning.
Are you fine?
Good.
Yeah, okay. Simba, okay. I'm telling you. No, I was just greeting and saying hello, hi, and hoping that you're quite okay here. Tata?
Yeah. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. Teddington, Tanzania, Ngapai. Who is speaking from the RFC, that is Reserve Force Council, which is a statutory body, which have got to be consulted whenever there are anything concerning the reserve forces. We have got our chairman, unfortunately, is not here today. Dr. John Job and the two vice chairmen, that is myself and Brigadier General John Del Monte. With us is our legal representative here, Rear Admiral Lucas Parkers. We are part of the executive committee of the RSC. And we have got also the management committee that is running the RSC. So we are grateful to have this opportunity of being able to put our inputs into this proposed bill. So I'll hand over to our legal representative to state exactly what our points are on the bill.
Thank you, Chair, honourable members. It's as the Vice Chairman was saying, a privilege always to be able to make a submission to the Portfolio Committee on Defence on behalf of the Reserve Force. Chair, our submission will address those issues which appeared in the advertised notice from the Portfolio Committee on Defence, and they are the Defence Amendment Bill points, first of all, an obligation to serve on the part of Reserve Force members in times other than war. The second is the establishment of a permanent Defence Force Commission, and we will make a submission with specific reference to the amendment or proposed amendment to Section 55 to define a military command. And then, with your indulgence, Chair, we make a quick reference to the submissions made by Sandu II in his legal opinion, you know, as it refers to the current status of Reserve Force members, you know, vis-à-vis the military trade unions. Chair, our verbal submission will then be in terms of the Defence Service Commission and the question of the military trade unions. The other three points are, in fact, dealt with in our submission, which is dated the 15th of July. And I hope that the honourable MPs have all got a copy of our submission. It is headed submission by Reserve Force Council on Defence Amendment Bill. Many have some spare copies for those members who may not necessarily have a copy. Chair, so if we can, we'd like to start off with the question of the military command, which is the first item on our submission. And what we are saying there is we need to bear in mind, and I'm talking from a reserve force point of view now.
Have you received it, people from the union? Okay, we'll make sure that. But you don't have, you can't answer here, only members of parliament. We'll give you copies to give you information. If you can just handle yourself properly there, you'll get the information from us. We just want to make sure that members of parliament get it first, before I give it to you. Did you get it from the legal people? Do you have the copy?
Okay. I hope the chairman's got a copy.
Uh-huh.
Chair, I hope you've got a copy.
No, I do. You just do your work.
Proceed. Chair, there's an annexure to the submission, which is really a bit of legal research in terms of what is meant by military command. It doesn't affect the submission made, but just to summarize it really means that if you're looking in a strictly legal sense, military command means any person who commands or have command or take command, and it goes right down to even officers commanding of reserve force units in its true sense. But we're obviously talking about the supreme military command. But just to put that into context, that is really what the annex is about. And what we'd like to do, we also want to place it into context in terms of saying, in terms of the Defence Act, the Reserve Force is an integral part of the SANDF. In fact, it is an important component because there are two forces, the regular force and the Reserve Force, two components making up the one force. And the Reserve Force has a major role to play in that actually it has to be that part of the Defence Force which has the conventional capability experience. They are a source of trained military capacity and they are the contingent ready force that needs to be called up if we are going to succeed with the amendment, even in times other than war, to supplement the regular force and to be available for times of emergency where their services are needed. So therefore we say that there is a constitutional requirement that there should be a reserve force. It is so prescribed in the Defence Act. And in that respect, we are saying that when we're looking at military command and we're looking at that very important part of the Defence Force, we're making a proposal that as part of military command, the Chief of Defence Reserves should in fact, in our view, be part of that military command. Having said that, we also believe that if such an appointment were to be made, that particular individual should be a Reserve Force officer, not a regular force officer. Having looked at the legal research and looked at the notice in terms of which we are now responding to say the response needs to be given to you in terms of the military command proposal which was made in the notice, we are saying that what we need to do, we need to amend the Defence Act where we talk about the military command being the chief of the SANDF to say that the President shall appoint the military command which shall consist in the first instance of the Chief of the South African National Defence Force, who shall exercise the military executive command of the force. Then we say that the officers incumbent of the military posts, which are subordinate to the Chief, held by the Chiefs of the Army, Air Force and Navy, the Surgeon General, the Chief of Intelligence and the Chief of Joint Operations, and in our view, including defense reserves, should be appointed with two provisos. The proviso is that the President shall make those subordinate appointments after the recommendations have been made by the Minister and the Chief of the National Defense Force to the President. In other words, we're saying that the President appoints the Chief, but the Chief and the Minister should in fact make recommendations to the President in respect of the subordinate officers, you know, for their appointment. And then, as I said, for the reasons mentioned in the case of the Chief of Defence Reserves, that the appointed officer should be a member of the Reserve Force. So, Chair, then, in a nutshell, what we are saying is that we agree as a Reserve Force Council that the military command should consist of those individuals or those appointees, as we proposed in paragraph 5 on page 2 of our submission. We make a further point that The extent to which Parliament and the National Executive require transparency in respect of the organisation and military command of the SANDF and to effectively exercise their oversight over the force and its employment, it would appear to the Council that this is a matter of constitutional policy rather than a question of law, and we believe it's best determined by those who are to exercise that oversight. And we believe that if the Portfolio Committee on Defence were to follow this Mutadino approach, will satisfy the oversight needs of Parliament and the National Executive. So, Chair, that is the Council's proposal in terms of a definition of the military command. Shall I continue my submission, or would you like people to take questions, Chair? Up to you.
I wanted members of Parliament to take the first part. Do you have a question on the military command and the presentation? You don't? Members of Parliament? Or you are still thinking about it? Okay, that's fine. But you say we should also allow the minister to come in.
No, what we're proposing is that we're simply suggesting in terms of the way in which the appointment must take place, that in respect of the subordinate officers to be presented to the President, there should be a recommendation from the Minister and the Chief, that they should be party of making a recommendation to the President in terms of the other appointees, apart from the Chief of Defence Force, which should be a presidential appointment. It's just a suggestion, sir.
You see, all the time the complication of this particular approach is that nobody tells us, are they fighting among themselves in the military command? Or is there tension? Or what is exactly going on? Do you have any knowledge of the Reserve Force Council? Or is there happiness? Why do they want us to interfere with in appointments at this particular moment?
Yeah, it's a legal point. In other words, the Constitution requires the President to appoint the military command. Now, what happened is that the President's office were then asked to appoint, I think it was the Chief of Intelligence, and the President's office said, but why should the President appoint one of the Chiefs? He only appoints the Chief of Defence Force, but they said, but this individual is part of military command. So therefore, the request went out to say that if there's now confusion in terms of what in terms of the Constitution constitutes military command, it needs to be defined. And so we're responding to say, well, if there has to be a definition of military command, this is our proposal. So it just puts the matter beyond doubt, because at the moment there is the misalignment between what the Constitution requires in terms of saying the President shall appoint the military command. It doesn't say the President shall appoint the Chief of National Defence Force. But the Defence Act, which is subordinate to the Constitution, says that the President shall appoint the Secretary of Defence and the Chief of National Defence Force. But the Secretary of Defence is not part of military command. So therefore, as was put in the notice, we were asked to respond to say, if we were to define a military command, what should that military command look like? And we are saying that we agree that if there's this uncertainty, it should be properly defined, but then there should be, you know, some provisos, as we've suggested, in terms of the manner in which the appointments must take place by the President. So it really arises a legal question here, that the President said, well, look, I don't appoint people other than the Chief, and the question is, who then is military command? And what we said, if we look at a strictly legal research on this matter, it means military commands means anybody in the military who commands all the way down to the lower levels who are actually in charge, who are in command. But we're saying we're confining ourselves to what we call the supreme military command, which is the top structure, sir. And we are talking about those individuals who actually command, excepting, of course, for the Chief of Intelligence, you know, who is in a very sensitive position, is very much part of military command, and in that sense, we believe he probably belongs in that part of it. Thank you, Chair.
So you want us to include the Chief of Reserve Force in the military command?
We believe it's appropriate, Chair. If one looks at the constitutional imperative and we look at the importance of your reserves, I think that it seems to us to be an appropriate appointment to be made at that level, sir.
Thank you, Chair. In making your submission, Admiral, what precedent do you use?
We actually confined ourselves to the proposal in the notice, And then we actually went and did the similar search to say, well, what does military command constitute? So one can actually take it down. We actually developed a couple of options to say that maybe one shouldn't talk about the specific appointments. One should in fact say, if one were to define military command, to say it needs to be the chief who exercises executive control over the armed forces. And those officers of subordinate rank who report to him of at least the rank of lieutenant general, without specifying specific posts. But then, of course, you know, it's not specific enough. So we rather than went and said, look, it's not really up to the council to develop options. We are simply saying, we're responding to the notice. That was what we believe came from the department, to say that's the way they wanted to find command, and we've responded to say we support this, with a couple of advisors in terms of another appointee, and the fact that the minister and the chief needs to be involved, and that the chief of the reserve should in fact be a reserve force officer.
You know, if I can tell you as a parliamentarian, the one of the experiences that we have in this country is, you know, between the police. And then it was the national commissioner, now it's general, you know. So, but either the national commission got appointed by the president, and the minister gets appointed by the president. You know what it has done in the police? At that level, there was no respect. I don't want to get into it, but I know it very well, because we're doing oversight over the police. So that created tension at some stage, you see. A lot of tension, you see. Because when, you see, that's why there are problems now today, you see. Because when the president wants to speak to the minister, if the National Commission doesn't want to speak to the minister, he goes to the president and says, I can report directly to the president because I'm appointed by the president. That debate has been going on for a very long time. That's why I've been always asking that, what is the tension, you see? What is this uncomfortability that you have? I'm talking from the basis of experience, but I do know that in the police, I know that type of experience. And the results of it today is what we see that has taken through in the court itself, you see, where the minister and the commissioner had to take the fall today. I'm just saying that there's something of that nature that I know out of experience it has happened, you see. So this is why we are much interested. I kept on asking that. Give us a sense. Because if we don't want to legislate something that is going to create tension, you see. Just be patient. You see, the moment you say, give the second layer, okay, the chief of defense gets appointed by the president. Now you say the other levels, the minister must interfere. And automatically it means that the person who's going to be left with that responsibility of working with those people is the chief of defense. Why would you want to shift them and bring the minister in? I'm just trying to find out the logic of that thing. But is it not going to create problems for us? And also give us a sense. You see, this is what David is raising. The history of that issue. You see, if you don't have much, don't worry. We'll have to see as parliamentarians what we do. You see, because also, you see, ministers, when you give them that type of right over, because he's got the political authority overall in the department, but why does he have to get involved in the appointment of that level of command? Would it not, because that president is not here, you see. I'm just asking, because we don't want to see, you see, My take on most of these things, when you legislate them, you have given it away. Nobody else can touch it. Because Parliament would be said that we gave that power to the minister. The minister is the one now that does that. You see. And then when the chief of command of the defense start having tension with the minister of who should be appointed, we can't mediate it all. Because we have done it by law, and it becomes totally difficult. And I agree that today South Africa is peaceful. When there's war, what are you going to do? And the minister is a civilian, doesn't know anything about the army. and we didn't understand the environment that the chief of command is faced with at that particular moment. And one thing that I respect with the defense, they respect the law. Even those that are there today, they respect the law and they read the law quite a lot, you see. They're very respectful when it comes to respecting the law. They wouldn't want to take any action. If any one of them get to be a problem, you'll have to wait for the minister. Because by law, you have said that you do that appointment with the minister. Are we not creating a problem for ourselves? People with military background will be able to tell us. Is that not going to set a very serious, difficult situation for the South African Defense Force?
Yeah. Thank you, Chairperson. I think we were discussing with people with that military background that we are talking about. Because I think one problem that we have is that when addressing the commander-in-chief in military terms, we say the commander-in-chief. And the commander-in-chief, he appoints the chief of the defense, you know. During wartime, we are looking at a point where the commander-in-chief himself will call the chief of the army and create the military council, which will be focusing at that war that is prevailing during that time. So once you put on the ministers, you'll end up saying even the fact that should be involved, and that will be totally wrong. The conflict that we are talking about, if there is any, they can at least show us, you know, because I've got a very serious problem in terms of the terms that you are going to use to say the president, then we forget that he is the commander-in-chief according to the Constitution of the Republic. Thank you.
Chair, again, I think this comes down to a question of what is the policy difficulty. I mean, first, it would seem to me that the Constitution provides for the appointment of military command is actually a mechanism to ensure civilian oversight of the military. The commander-in-chief appoints the chief of the defense force and can hire and fire. That is absolutely appropriate. The question here is, what is the difficulty and why did this problem arise? Now, my understanding of the problem was slightly different. The problem did not arise as a result of a civil-military argument. It arose out of the fact that divisional heads or chiefs of services would have to be appointed in terms of public service regulations, and that created a difficulty. Now, I'm not sure if that's correct or not, but I understood that that was the fundamental difficulty. My question then would really be to the department. I mean, is that a correct interpretation of the problem that we're dealing with? I'm not sure of the facts, but I think these are the kinds of policy inputs that we need from the department to clearly identify what the problem is and then to suggest solutions.
Thanks, Chair. I just wanted clarity on the submission that there's a constitutional imperative to have a reserve force. I can't find that in Chapter 11.
No, I'll have to find the reference to the fact that the Constitution somebody provided for the establishment of reserve force, but you know, maybe it was in the white paper of defence, Chair, so I'll correct that part of it.
Not in the Constitution?
No, sir.
Okay. So that was an oversight and excitement on the side.
Constitutional imperative in quotation marks.
Okay, would you answer the other question?
Sure. Perhaps I can start with the problem. The problem is actually stated in the notice, sir, and it says the following. It says, and this is now the notice which was published in the press, to say, Section 202 of the South African Constitution 1996 requires the President to appoint, quote, the military command of the Defence Force. The military command of the Defence Force. The Defence Act number 42 of 202, however, does not define the concept military command. Instead, Section 7.1 and 13.1 of the Defence Act only stipulates the appointment of the Secretary of Defence and the Chief of the SANDE by the President. The statement then goes to say, an inclusive definition of military command is therefore proposed to include the appointment of the Chiefs of the Army, Air Force, Navy, Medical Health Services, Defence, Intelligence and Joint Operations to the structure. So that is the way in which the Department defined what they considered to be the problem. In other words, to say that the Constitution definition of military command is said to be the chief in the terms of the Defence Act, and they are proposing that military command is more than the chief. So it is really, it seems to me, and maybe Mr. Advocate Vassen can help you, it arose as a legal matter, not as a policy matter. So one either has to change the Constitution to say military, not instead of military command, say the chief of the SANDF, or the Defence Act must say that military command means the chief of Defence Force.
This problem arose during, as I understand it, during the appointment of the head of defense intelligence. Now, what was the problem with the appointment of the head of defense intelligence? That's how this problem surfaced. I know that it's been framed in a particular way by the department, but I would like to know, and I mean, Admiral, you representing the reserves and the Reserve Force Council, this might not be... it might not be correct to direct this question to you, but what I would like to know probably from the department is what exactly was the problem that arose with the appointment of the head of defense intelligence, because that is how this problem surfaced and has now ended up in Parliament. I think we need a clear explanation, Chair.
No. No. I have been advising you that I'm the one who's chairing here. You're not chairing. You leave this to me. I must sort it out. And no, wait. I won't take the answer now. I want to leave it with you to take note of what David has raised now. And so it's going to be a question that is going to arise. I do hope that the people in the ministry who are talking to the Secretary of Defense have taken note of that question so that you would want an answer and guidance as we are going towards closure, so that you know exactly what is the stating, what exactly is influencing and being asked of us to be able to decide on this particular matter. Is there circumstances that we are not being told so that we don't legislate something that we don't know? If we can just be given some bit of information of exactly what is happening. And as Honorable Menir now says, there are other things that he knows about this. The general on the military, his appointment in the military intelligence has influenced this particular development. I know the commission can talk on this one, so I won't put it to the commission. I'll give it to the department in issues of policy. I'm right, Honorable Grunewald. You can talk. It's not blameship, you just want to know. Yeah. But I'm just saying that because you represent the commission, don't venture into it. It's more complicated. So I'll leave it with you. No. David, don't smuggle in. You're looking for interim reports all the time. There's no... Yeah. So we'll leave it at that one on this particular. Yeah. Okay. No, I think we have taken note of what we have proposed around this particular one on the military command. We just saw that because of the Reserve Force Council, and you would know the dynamics within the institution. But it's fine. Yeah. Let's go to the next development. Yes, sir?
I hope I understand your argument correctly, Honorable Member, that you are saying that at the moment, in the military command, the reserve force officer or the reserve force is not accommodated, is not included in the military command. And if I understand you correctly, is that the reason why you are saying that the Reserve Force Council reiterates its views that the Chief of Defense Reserves should be a reserve officer, should be a reserve force officer? Do I understand you correctly that the Reserve Force is not included in the military command? Is that understanding correct? And you are therefore saying we would like ourselves as reserve force people to be included in the military command. Is that how I understand you?
Thank you very much. That's a very important question, because at the moment what happens is that the military, there's a body called the Military Command Council. The Military Command Council consists of various people. You know, the people I've mentioned in our definition, it includes people like the Chief of Logistics, it includes the Chief of Human Resources, and so on, and it also includes the Chief Defense Reserve. So if you're looking at the way in which it's structured within the department at the moment, the Chief of Defense Reserves is part of the command, of the Military Command Council. He's also a member of what is known as the Defense Staff Council, where people of that level, in fact, meet in a policy-making situation, because he's also the principal advisor to the Chief in matters relating to the reserves, and he has a report on the contingent readiness of the reserve force. So he's very much part of the command structure. But what we're talking about here today is if we were to define the military command, you know, as stated in the notice, to be specific appointees. In other words, like the four service chiefs, joint ops, and intelligence, we are saying that we make a very, you know, strong plea to say that if you are talking about military command in the constitutional sense, where the president must make the appointment, we say there's a case to be made for the Chief Defense Reserve to be so appointed. But if this definition doesn't fly, the Chief Defense Reserve is still very much part of the military command within the current structure. But none of those people are appointed by the president. And what was being proposed in this notice was to say, let us please define exactly who this military command is that you're talking about that needs to be appointed by the president. So we're saying if this happens, we would like the committee to consider including the Chief Defense Reserves in that definition, on the basis that individual or appointee must be a reserve force officer, because there's not much point in appointing a regular force officer into the post of the Chief Defense Reserves, because then it defeats the object. But this is only if this definition is even to be considered, Chair. But just to make the point that the Chief Defense Reserves is very much part of the military command structures at the moment within the Department of, within the SNF and the SNF and the Department of Defense. Thank you, Chair.
I'll just take Honorable Mazi and then I'll take you, Honorable Kuranovas.
Chairperson, I don't serve in the reserve force, but my understanding of a reserve force is that if there is a hierarchy. That hierarchy is a hierarchy from the delegated powers of the appointed officers. There will be no officers that will be appointed by the president. And if my understanding is correct, I think we should think around it that way. Because there is no way that the president can go and appoint officers in the reserve force, because the reserve force is not members are not permanent members of the force. They are members who participate on call-ups. And I think when we discuss it, we must discuss it along that understanding, and that's my view.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, this is a technical thing. I mean, we've got a military command council, as the person has said, and then you've got the command staff council, which includes the Secretary of Defense. Now, it's a technical thing as far as the Constitution is concerned, the appointment from the President's side, and I think the way I understand it, what the reserve forces are asking, that if we are going to define the command, and we say, for instance, that we are including heads of departments or services, that we must also include the head of reserve forces. That is what they're asking. So it's a technical thing. If we're going to define it, they want to make sure that the chief of the reserve forces are included in that definition. So it's really mere a technical thing. It's actually that's all.
No, but after listening to Honorable Mazia, it becomes no more technical. It does bring in some politics into it. That do you need a reserve force to be represented in the way if they only come up during times of collapse? This is another part of the regular force. So I'm just saying that that's what Mazia is now bringing in to broaden the debate. But we will debate it, finalize it amongst ourselves. No, we will talk about it. It's just that I allow members to get clarity exactly what does the Reserve Force Council mean about this type of development. And what we are going to add to the ministry, that Rasom, if you can persuade the Chief of Defense to come so that you can also help him, so that when you finalize that type of view, you can give us a sense of exactly what the policy, he would know more better how does this thing function, because he's operational, he's in front of him. He'll give members more insight of how that operation is taking place. Okay.
Actually, there's just a small point.
Are you okay? Okay. We'll take note of it. Yeah.
Actually, I just want to make a small point clear here. Is that as much as they are part-time, well, they are called for, but in the Army, we have reserve force members who are almost permanent. So there's no problem in having one of those whose positions allowed them to be semi-permanent, because as they are not supposed to be permanent, but they are semi-permanent in that they are serving long-term durations in the Army. So there is no problem in us us having a reserve force member being put in a position of commanding the reserves. And in that, the reserves, as we are saying, it's a one-force concept. We should not see them as people who are just called when they are needed. They are part of the Army. They are deliberating on a daily basis as much as the permanent force members are doing. So there will be no problem in having a reserve force, because already we have people who are serving almost full-time in the reserve as reserve forces in the Army.
Now we'll take... I don't have a bad time.
Thank you, Chair. I'll just come back to my first question, and the real question in asking what
I always obey orders.
Chair, in speaking to the question of precedent, I really wanted to know whether your model or your proposal is based on any international best practice. That's really my question.
Chair, no, we didn't do an international benchmark, certainly, but if we have an opportunity, we'd very much like to have the opportunity to do so, sir. Could I just take the opportunity just to clarify, and I'm pleased for the member asked the question about the reserve force, because I think it's important to note that if you look at the Defence Act, the composition of the South African National Defence Force is very clear. It said it continues to exist and consist of a regular force and a reserve force. And there are no difference in terms of which, in the way people are actually promoted. In other words, all brigadier generals and above, whether they're reserves or regulars, are appointed by the minister. So there's no difference, and I mean, if there has to be an appointment to the president, you know, I don't think you know, as the Honourable MP Krunewald was saying, it is really a technical point. And we're simply saying if there were to be a definition, we'd like the chief of the reserves to be included. If no such definition, then things just remain the same. So it's really a constitutional policy issue that needs to be resolved to say what does the committee think military command should actually mean. And we're very happy to make an input to say international benchmark tells us the military command is in fact these people.
No, by next week we are taking decisions, so we have missed the opportunity. But I'm not going to call you back to Parliament to come and talk about the experiences of our nation. We have missed the opportunity. Okay, fine. Let's go to the next one now. You must make sure that Honorable Krunewald get that copy of the international benchmark, because he must convince us in the community.
In fact, General Del Monte is leading a delegation to Norway on Friday to meet with the International Congregation of Reserve Officers Associations, and I've already asked him for them to do a little bit of a study to see, you know, to what extent are armed forces or military forces unionized, also with respect to reserve force members, and we can ask him at the same time to do a little bit of an international benchmark study in terms of what constitutes military command in other military forces. And then when he comes back, we make a submission to the committee and say, this is what we were able to find out internationally. Thank you, sir. I'm sorry I've asked him now, but I think he'll take the challenge.
You're not invited in this trip. I think that they're inviting you to go. Can we go to the next one?
Thank you, Chair. The next point is simply just to reiterate what we said to the Portfolio Committee Defence on the previous submission we made, to say that we fully support the principle of the reserve force members having an obligation to serve in times other than war. And we also pointed out to the committee that it is in fact in alignment with the international benchmarking that we did. And just to reiterate, we made two proposed amendments. The first one is it goes about the minister having to sign contracts. We suggested that should in fact be delegated by the minister to the chief or an authorised officer, because we simply don't expect the minister to be involved with volumes of administration and signing of contracts and so on. We believe it belongs to another level. And we had an interesting academic legal debate about what delegation was all about, and we were assisted by Advocate Vassen to say that if you don't specifically authorize somebody that you authorize to be able to delegate, you can't do so. And then the other point we made was that in terms of the Defense Amendment proposal, when it comes to the signing of contracts, there's a proviso to say that if a member doesn't sign within 18 months, his membership terminates. And there was then a proposal that there should be another opportunity for a member to actually be called, to be given notice, to say, please come and explain why your membership shouldn't be terminated, and so on. And we believe that places a very burdensome onus on the department, because if a person hasn't signed the contract and now go and find him to give him a notice to say, please come and explain to me, becomes administratively very difficult. So we're suggesting it should be very simple to say, you've got 18 months worth of grace to sign the contract. If you don't sign the contract, it's terminated. And the remedy is that if you then want to, you can always come and rejoin the reserve force. There's no problem with it. But we don't believe that to have another go is really administratively a very wise move, sir. So it's really from an administrative point of view, we believe that we should keep it simple. Those were the 2 points we made, sir.
I thought you said you wanted to reflect on what Sandu has proposed.
On what, sir? Sorry?
What Sandu 2 was talking about. You're coming to the criminalization. Let me finish my point. I'm just saying that Sandu 2 says, can't we avoid the South Africans to continue criminalizing even people who are good business people? Because the moment maybe he left the army, he would want to make a contribution, and he missed out in that opportunity because maybe he's got a child who's pregnant or his business is in the time of auditing, and he can't go. What is your view about that?
Chair, we fully support the proposal made by Sandu 2 in saying that we put in the words fail. In other words, you refuse or fail to render service. Now, including the word fail, they pointed out means that you that there's no question of criminal intent. In other words, it's simply a fact. If you're not there, you might have a very good reason why you can't be there. They're simply saying to remedy that particular situation, they propose that we must put in the words without reasonable excuse. We support that, sir. So we believe that when we finally do that sanctions clause, we must put in words to that effect to just make sure that that's it's correct. Sir. We're quite happy with that, sir.
Any member of parliament has got a view? Babu Smiley? Well, you don't know. Are you fine, members? We'll proceed. Tata?
Now, I want to comment on the issue of a member failing to sign a contract after 18 months. To me, 18 months is a reasonable time, really, for anybody to consider whether to sign the contract or not. Why should that person be given notice and be given reasonable more time to sign a contract? 18 months is long enough. Also, the question of reasonable time. What may be reasonable to you may not be reasonable to me. So, I don't think a person should be given more reasonable time to sign the contract after that person has failed to sign after 18 months. I think it's a long period of time given to anybody. I'm telling you, Bambi.
Just comment based on a question. I would like to know what age is accepted in the reserve force. And can I also be a member of the reserve force?
You and I don't qualify.
I'm 74 years of age.
I'm 85.
I'm a member of the Mkhonto Wesizwe. No, Honorable Horval, we were just joking outside. So, can I be a member of the Reserve Force? If I become a member of the Reserve Force, are you going to take me into physical training or what? If so, of course, I will say I'm old. Thank you very much. That's my comment. Thank you very much. Thank you.
David.
I wonder if the Reserve Force Council would comment would comment on a matter that arose at the hearing with the Chief of the Reserve Force. And that is the bill gives protection to members of the Reserve Force. But what about protection to employers? How do we deal with the situation where a business faces potential ruin as the result of a reserve force officer being called up in peacetime? What protection and what recourse is there for that business? This is obviously a situation we would not want to arise. We'd want the business to join us and be partners in building up the reserves. But in that kind of case, what recourse and what protection does business have?
As you answer, you must be aware that we've got unions here. And they're looking for membership, you see. I saw them getting more interested in this point, that there's an opportunity to have another member who's going to complain during the reserve force collapse. No, geez, you see now, you're looking for membership in a different way. Answer, sir.
See, I'd very much like to answer the Honourable Member's question about age. In the Reserve Force, you can start serving from 18, and you serve automatically if your service is still required to the age of 65. After 65, you can actually serve until 75, but that's on the basis that your skills are required, that you're medically fit, that there's nobody else to do the job, and it's basically on a yearly basis. So we have, in fact, got skilled people at various levels in the Reserve Forces, they've got a particular skill after 65 who are then able to serve. But, you know, then you've got the chief who actually appoints you must motivate to say, this is why I particularly want this member to keep on serving. So he's got a year to go, sir. The member has a year to go, an opportunity of a year. But you can't be a serving member of parliament to be in the reserve force, unfortunately. General Del Monte tells me that this is always also subject to military ministerial approval. But anyway, you can in fact serve till 75 in uniform. That's the first question. The second question goes about what is the protection against the, to protect the employer. There is in fact a chapter on exemptions and deferment boards in the Defence Act, which will come into operation. You know, if an obligation to serve, was in fact to be approved, which then means that you are able to, the employer, to the exemptions board can in fact make a case to say, look, I need this member to be deferred because this is the implication for my business. And in the past, Labour used to serve on the exemptions boards to make quite sure that there's a check and a balance. So, we will, in terms of looking at the policies and procedures to be followed in terms of the appointments of exemptions and deferment boards, that is certainly an issue which is very much part of that process to say, here is what will happen to my business or my employer's business if I were to be called up and therefore ask for exemption. And it used to be exempted in the past, and there should be no reason why it shouldn't happen again, sir.
Can I?
Will it affect journalists? Because I wanted to call up for journalists to go to the border.
Okay. That. Yeah. Can I add something? That actually the reserves, we've got what we call scenic civil-military relations. So all such problems are supposed to be sorted in that committee. The Defence Force is, if it's not there, supposed to create a committee that is working with the between the employees and the employers to harmonize their relations. That whenever the chief of the commander in chief wants a particular person, then the employer should understand. So those relations have got to be created in time, not that when there's a problem, you step then to face the employer and say, no man, can't you give us this so and so. There should be mutual relations that can make it easy for that member to be called, and also to warn the employers that we might need this person at any time or at short notice, so they are always aware. And in those systemic organizations, that's where you can get to know what type of employers are involved in this to avoid misunderstandings at the time when a person is being called to serve.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I don't want to reopen the debate on membership and who qualify. I think Admiral Backus dealt with the age sort of criteria. But there's a reality outside. And I was called by the ex-CISCAI Defence Force members on Monday in a meeting where they asked whether they are military veterans or what are they. And that was dependent on the question that I asked to the minister to define military veterans and against the background of the new Department of Military Veterans. So, Chairperson, I think we must come clear on who is a member of the... That definition must be clear because it can create problems. Because some of those people say, if I'm not a military veteran, then I must be a member of the reserve force. But I cannot be nothing because they claim to be trained and healthy. Some of them are not healthy, but they are still fit at the age group and those things are still in place. So that is a
a thing that we need to look at when we legislate. Thank you.
No, we'll get to that particular detail. That to coronavirus, that to dollar, and then the last one will be main.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just a view, it feels to me that if we are deliberating actually on the bill at this moment, at the phase actually should be the public hearings. I understand we can ask questions. Coming back to the protection of the employer, I think we must say to each other that there is no financial, compensation to the employer. But I mean, even if the exemption board, for instance, does not want to exempt an employee, of course that employee can still go to the courts and come with a court order to protect his rights. But I think at this stage, Chairperson, and that is the essence of the thing, is the good relation between employers and the defense and the reserve forces, and that we can say that we appreciate, because that is actually the sacrifice from employers to allow their employees to be members of the reserve force and to be called up and to serve, to give service to South Africa. So in fact we have appreciation towards the employers as far as that is concerned.
Thanks very much, Commissioner Chairperson, my question is relating to women. Since from yesterday on unions and this reserve force delegation, I didn't even see a single woman. But I just found out on reserve forces there is a woman there, or it's just a man. If it's just a man, why? Excuse me? Or in the terrible situation of language. You know, I'm saying, Comrade Chairperson, I just found out from yesterday and on unions, I saw only the men, and the reserve force also is just a man. Just find out there is a woman there or not. If they are not there, why? If the women are there, why is just a man who's going to make a presentation? Because we are looking gender equality. Thanks very much.
My question is really comes back to the question of employees. Are you satisfied that there are adequate protection mechanisms for employees in respect of reserves? We obviously want to move to a situation where there's a partnership, but we must accept that if we're legislating, we have to legislate for the hard case also.
Perhaps I can answer the Honourable Mayne for a start. In Section 67 of the Act, it makes specific reference that an employer can make a lodge a submission, you know, to an exemptions board, you know, for an employee who's been called up to be exempted. But what normally happens in practice is the officer commanding, who calls up these people, knows what their personal circumstances are. And if at his level, he's satisfied that the individual, you know, for very good reason, should not be called up, he probably won't. He'll find somebody else who's able to be called up. But if there's a general call up, in other words, you say the whole of the battalion or the whole of the regiment must go, and the officer commanding don't have that discretion, then, you know, it has to go one up. But the mechanism is certainly there, and it certainly worked very well in the past, and there's no reason why it shouldn't work in the future. So it's actually in the Act to make the way in which it happens quite clear. But it's people having to use their discretion. And as both members were saying, the relationship between the Defence Force and the Reserve Force and the employer should be of such a nature that one negotiates. So look, I can't send him now, but I'll make him available in December when we've got builder's holidays type of thing. He can go and relieve somebody else. And in the old days when conscription were enforced, that is exactly what happened, sir. Not everybody was able to go. I don't know whether General Almonte might be able to make some further, but just on the question of the women, in fact, in Cape Town, the office which is run by the regional office of General Anderson, and in fact, the major sitting behind me now, works for this lady. She's a naval captain, reserves, who runs the office. She's at colonel's level. You know, I'm just saying that, you know, the Western Cape, in fact, I'm very pleased to say she's a naval officer. But no, we certainly have ladies who command regiments, in medical battalions. We've got lots of females at colonel's rank, at, you know, one-star ranks and so on. So no, we certainly got them. Unfortunately, we're a little bit like the trade unions today. You know, we all happen to be male, but we're trying to recruit some females. She's in fact also a member of the Reserve Force Council, by the way. Captain Maron. Thank you.
Chair, I just want to just speak to the composition of the exemptions board. The exemptions board is not a military board. I think it's very important to note that. It's made up of a mixture of people from the Department of Labor, labor union representation, not just military, but general labor union representation. And in fact, from experience, only the secretariat of that board is manned by the Defence Force and is in fact that's where the Defence Force has responsibility. But the actual deliberation and the decision-making is done by people outside of the Defence Force to give it that distance from the military culture as such.
No, what I was doing, Mr. Honorable, I'm allowing members to get more information, you see, because if you know that we have not been exposed that much to the Reserve Force Council and its operations and its concerns. We have not had a hearing where the Reserve Force is explaining what it is doing. So that's why I'm giving a little bit, so that when people go to conclusion, at least they have a sense of what they are going to confront. Let's go to the next one.
Chair, the next point we make in our written submission is it also, just interestingly enough, goes about the employer. Now, Section 104 of the Defence Act makes it an offence if an employer discriminates unfairly against an employee on the grounds of the employee's wish to become a voluntary member of the Reserve Force, and in such a case, such an employer will be guilty of an offence and liable to conviction. You see, it's a question of the carrot and the stick. So if you're not a friend of mine, you discriminate against my member, and in terms of this particular section, you know, you can in fact be liable. You know, I don't think it's ever happened, but anyway, it's there. And what we are saying is, in the old Defence Act, when there was also a question of conscription, there was a further clause which we think might be worthwhile just considering again if we were to be able to call people up. It also means that a person who refuses to employ a person who's a member of the Reserve Force, or because of the person's membership, or if he has the liability to serve, you know, that could also be constituted as an offence. It's just to, you know, to have a check and a balance. In other words, to say, look, if we have an element of conscription where there's an obligation of you to serve to call a call-up, there needs to be some protection. And we're just proposing this for consideration, sir. Chair, the only other point I want to make is just the question of Reserve Force members and military trade unions. And this goes about the Standard 2 legal opinion, which was presented to the committee yesterday, where the statement is made, reference is made that members of the permanent force constitute a special type of worker for the purpose of Section 23(2) of the Constitution, and as workers they are entitled to join military trade unions. But there's a restriction on their membership in accordance with Section 36. In other words, yes, you can join, you can have freedom of association, but because you're in the military, it means that your membership and the way in which you exercise your military trade union membership must be restricted in some way. Now, the legal opinion didn't refer specifically to Reserve Force members. It only spoke about permanent force or regular force members. But if you go to the regulations, which is also referred to in the legal opinion, which they call Chapter 20 regulations, there is a provision which says that Reserve Force members can in fact be represented by military trade unions only whilst in service. The problem is, of course, is what does it mean? Does it mean when he's called up? Does it mean when he's actually serving in terms of a 5-year contract but he only serves 10 days a year or 30 days a year? So that there's a bit of a problem there. Then there's also the question that Reserve Force members who happen to be in the private sector can in fact be members of their own trade union. In other words, you might be a postal worker, you can be a member of that particular union. And so if you then also member of the military trade union, I mean, is there a conflict of interest or can it happen? You know, it's just a question. And the other practical matter is, you know, the question of membership fees. In other words, in terms of regular force members, there's a monthly deduction from their salaries. Reserve force members don't serve on that basis. They get paid after they've served. And so, you know, that's probably not the department's problem, but it certainly, you know, may be a problem for the, you know, for the trade unions. So this is one of the reasons why the department hasn't implemented the or couldn't implement a garnishee system for paying of reserve force members, you know, subscription fees. This is what we believe. But there are two other issues. The first issue is when Section 55, the Military Bargaining Council, there was an agreement between SANDU and the department was actually signed. Both SANDU and the department specifically excluded reserve force from being part of that particular process. In other words, Section 55 and the MBC bargaining process was only in regard between the unions and the department in respect of regular force, not reserve force. So the Reserve Force Council, with it was statutory established, said, well, maybe because we're the advisory consultative body, you know, perhaps we can then be co-opted or get some way involved in the bargaining process. But we took legal opinion, and the opinion that it would be totally out of bodies for the Reserve Force Council to get involved in military bargaining, because this is not our mandate. So therefore we were excluded, which we accept, because that's legally quite correct. So then it means that neither the council nor the military trade union were, in fact, when there was bargaining or settlements in terms of pay and entitlements for regular force, you know, the reserve force members were simply, because they just get paid the bottom scale of any rank, but there's no bargaining process. Because the councils were excluded, the department said to the Reserve Force Council, why did you go and get legal opinion to see what is the legal status of reservists? And at the time, we obtained two independent legal opinions, and the opinions were on the basis that, yes, permanent force members or regular force members are special workers. They are sui generis in terms of the relationship with the employer, which is the department, because of their restricted rights in terms of Section 36 of the Constitution. But they are full-time members of the department, therefore they are in fact workers and therefore perfectly entitled to join a military trade union. The legal opinion stated that if you now contrast that with a reservist who serves voluntarily in terms of a military service contract on a part-time basis for specific periods of service, they construed that to mean that those people are not workers in the traditional sense or in the legal sense, and therefore if they're not a worker, there can't be an employer-employee relationship between the department and the reserve force member, and hence, from a legal point of view, they can't form and or join a military trade union. So that was in contrast to the regulation which makes provision for them to join. Because of the situation at the time, because A, they were excluded from the MBC, and B, because of the legal opinions that were sought, the department took a decision to say, for the time being, we will exclude reserve force members from joining military trade unions, and we've added them to the conditions of service of the contract that they signed, until such time as their position has been resolved. Now, that is the position, and what we are saying as Reserve Force Council, and this is a matter that we actually propose to both the department and to the minister, is to say that the reserve force is a contingent ready force. It is the armed force of last resort. And if they remain ununionized, it means that you've got a force that if the regular force were either not available or they were to go on strike, either legally or illegally, you know, what other man source, what other armed forces have you got available to take up the slack, if you like? So we're just saying it's not for the council to say. I think it's a national policy matter, and we believe that it's not the contractual relationship necessarily. I think it's a question of the way in which the regulations are framed, and the difficulties surrounding the membership of reserve force members in military trade unions. So it's really a policy thing which needs to be developed and considered and so on, and obviously the military trade unions will have their own views on the matter, sir. So all we're saying from the Reserve Force Council point of view, just bear in mind that at the moment they are not able to join in terms of the military contract. It may or may not be enforceable, but that is the present situation, sir. And we thought it was important just to bring that to your attention. So the last point is simply this, to say that
we say that in this particular sense, the reserve force is what we call the ultimate guarantor of the Constitution. Because they are ready to serve, they volunteers, and they are now going to be obliged to be called up, sir. That is the end of my submission, sir. Thank you.
I start with Tato Tolo, and then I come with Honorable Kronawald, and then I'll...
Thank you very much, Comrade Chairperson. And if I'm out, you'll correct me. You know, we've got our brother. Those, they were fighting for freedom. And those people that have got experience. And when you go in township and rural areas, sometimes you'll find they're just drinking alcohol. Those people have got experience. When they're talking, they're just talking about the army. Some of them, they're 50 years, 55 years, and so on and so on. Now, my question, what can the council help those kind of people? Because those people, they were fighting for freedom and their experience. They understand. If war can come in South Africa, they can help, I'm telling you. But what mechanism can you do as a council to help those people also to be involved? Thank you very much.
Chair, mine is a more a technical thing. I just want to make sure from reserve forces, do you still want to include, and I suppose you do, in clause 5, 6B, D, 4, that we also include there because it refers to the functions of the commission, where it says consult with the Secretary for Defense, the Chief of the Defense Force, and you want included the Reserve Force Council. It's a small technical thing. I don't see it in your submission yet, but I suppose you still want that in as well. And of course, that is in line with Section 48.4 of the Defence Act, where the Reserve Force Council must be consulted on all matters of the Reserve Forces.
Chair, I think this is an important point to make, and it picks up on the closing comment by Admiral Bakker. This is a constitutional democracy. The only role the Defence Force has in respect of the Constitution is... I'm sorry, Chair, I seem to be... Okay. I just think this is an important point. This is a constitutional democracy. The only relationship that the Defence Force has with the Constitution is to abide by it. The ultimate guarantor of our Constitution is the Constitutional Court.
To you, my leader. You know, I just left something. You know, I just want to mention, I think all of us will remember, I think 3 or 4 years back, there were one of MK member in somewhere here in Cape Town, in Khayelitsha. That man is an experienced man. And the criminal of taxi drivers, they were using him to shoot and kill some other people. I'm talking to you now. He's in prison. Now that's why I'm trying to say these kind of things. I think it's very, very important also to make sure to help them. Thank you.
We'll take note of that one. Baba Mazi.
Yeah, Chairperson. I think the question raised by Dr. Tolo, I'm not sure, but I think it's going to be an unfair question to the presenters, in the sense that during the period of the defense review, a structure was created led by Brakit Mugwabe. I think what we need to do is to follow up on that and see whether the structure is still functional or not. That structure was responsible necessarily for what Dr. Tolo is raising now.
No.
Including the previous question.
No, we'll get, so I always want to leave them and get an opportunity to hear if the council does know some of these things. Okay.
I'm glad that Honourable Groenewald drew our attention to the fact that we particularly wanted to amend Section 62B
little paragraph D, little Roman 4, where it says that the functions of the commission is to consult with the Secretary for Defence, the Chief Defence Force, members of the Defence Force and other interested persons or bodies, and because of the statutory requirement for the Reserve Force Council to be consulted, we believe it would be appropriate for the words after the Chief Defence for the word Reserve Force Council to be included, so it can read to be to consult the Commission to consult with the Secretary, the Chief Reserve Force Council and other bodies and members interested in Defence Force matters, sir, and conditions of service.
For the sake of the committee, you will have to write it up properly.
I will do so, sir.
So that you can...
We make that submission?
You have to make that submission.
Yeah. And, you know, on that particular score, sir, the notice also required inputs in terms of the establishment of a permanent Defence Service Commission, and just to place on record, the Reserve Force Council now formally also makes the point that they firmly believe that the establishment of a permanent Defence Service Commission, which will also be empowered to make recommendations on Reserve Force pay, salaries and entitlements, especially in the absence now of the military tradies and the Reserve Force Council, would certainly be able to make recommendations in that respect to the Minister to at least take care of that particular lacuna, sir. And then lastly, the Reserve Force Council believes, and I think we're going to have to look at the legal position, as I stated yesterday, that if Section 55 were to be amended by reference to a Defence Service Commission, Section 55 has a mechanism in terms of which bargaining takes place. I don't think that amending Section 55, in our view, in any way is intended to abolish or cause the demise of military trade unions, because it doesn't affect Regulations 20. I think that the Constitution is clear, the Constitution court judgments are clear, but all I'm saying is that you don't easily have to hang your military trade union hat on Section 55 to say that if that is amended, you know, it causes a problem. But, you know, that's just our point of view, sir. And then the last point, if you'll indulge me, sir, the Military Veterans versus Reserve Force Council. The Military Veterans Affairs Act of 17 of 1999 has got a very specific definition of what a military veteran is. And it says that any member or any person who served either in the old Union Defence Forces, the old SADF, the TBVC states who served in the non-statutory force in Contra-Seas or APLA are considered to be a military veteran. But there's a proviso that you have had to be on the certified personnel register. In other words, if it's CISCAI, the CISCAI was a statutory defence force, and all those members who served in the CISCAI defence force who have got a force number are, in terms of the definition, a military veteran. There's no doubt about it, sir. The difficulty arises where people are not on the CPR for the so-called certified personnel registers, which had to be available. So, sir, that's the difficulty. And So, sorry. And the other thing is that the people are able to join the reserve force, provided that they meet what they call the rank age limit. In other words, you can't be a sergeant if you say more than 35 or 40, and there must be a job.
I have to stop you now.
Sir, sorry.
And I have to get you to stop now. You see, I don't want you to go into another topic. They always caution me as members that let's focus on the bill and finish up the bill. I think you have provided enough information now, because we need to move forward now. But thanks for the information you have provided. And we'll consider most of the things that you have raised as members of parliament, and we'll engage you. But all the other things that you think are outstanding that we need to do a submission, do them to Mandy, please. When he comes back, are you inviting Kronabal to Norway? Are you taking Kronabal to Honorable Kronabal to Norway? Is he invited?
Thank you, Chairperson, but I don't have to sign for that. I have full confidence in the general don't.
Okay. Now, I was not motivating your case. I wanted to withdraw you. Yeah. Can we go to the next group? A presentation by Reserve Force members from KwaZulu-Natal. Do you have a presentation, or it's more verbal?
Yes, Chair President.
In the meantime, introduce your delegation.
Okay. I'm Kopan Sichela. I have two of my colleagues who are here, which is Kopan Ngwenya and the rifleman Zama. We are from KZN Reserve Forces, we saw the advertisement on paper and we decided that we must respond and ask to come and do presentation. And we would like to thank you, Chairperson, for the opportunity that you've afforded us to come here and present our case. First of all, we support the establishment of the Defence Force Service Commission, and I think it is very important that we do have such a structure.
Can I just find out, honourable members, do you all have Zomkale with IP? Yeah. Do you have the copy of their presentation? That when I copy your presentation. Okay, ma'am. Can't take it in the start of it. Can you make sure that the older people have got the presentation?
Okay.
Men about that. Little men. Oh. Okay. I got your Quebec. Kalo butata namde abulela but can say gizu choka kutlo kutungu balu lo kutu. No, I'm going to say that I'm going to say that I'm going to. So just introduce yourself very well. Bazo kubo that.
Okay. Thank you for the opportunity, Chairperson. I'm Corporal Fichela, a member of the Reserve Force from KZN. I've got two colleagues here, which is Corporal Ngwenya, also from KZN, as well as Rifleman Zama. Will forgive me, Chairperson, because the person who is typing this, there are some of the problems in the sentences, but we'll sort that out as we go along. What we wanted to raise, Chairperson, is that
the most important thing, you must capture the content of what you want to do, rather than reading it.
But
we'll do it in our own way. Just give us the content of the issues.
Okay. First and foremost, Chairperson, we'd like to say we are very happy with the establishment of the Defence Force Service Commission, and we support it that it must be permanent, especially considering the difficulties that you are experiencing in the reserves, especially in KZN. And we raise the issues that we think and we believe that it must look at. The first point that I would like to raise is that there is a perception, the high hierarchy of the government as well as the reserve structure, that the members of the reserve have worked elsewhere. And that I do not believe it's true, because when you go to KZN, and most of the members who are working in the reserve force, they solely rely on the Defence Force for income. So I think this perception is incorrect to say most of our members are working elsewhere. In fact, we are not working elsewhere. Some of us are graduates, but we're only relying on the Defence Force for income. So that perception, I think, is not correct. Also, we had a problem also with the policy that says members are obliged to honour a call-up, which is true. They must be obliged to honour a call-up, but you have a problem when you say the unit is not obliged to call the members, because that's where we have confusion. Because we feel that is opening us up for abuse and favoritism. Because now we will find that you will have an argument with a leader that is outside work, but then you won't be called up because there's nothing in writing that says he must call you up. So that is the kind of a problem that you are currently experiencing, and it is happening now. So I thought the commission needs also to look at those conditions. Secondly, we think that leadership of the reserve unit should be guided by the same rules, because now when you go to different units, you'll find that one unit is operating the other way and the other unit is operating its own way. So I think there should be a uniformity in terms of how the reserve force units are run. And if you compare units from different provinces, then it becomes a problem, because you see some, they will tell you that they are operating in this fashion. But when you go to your own unit, then you find that they are operating in a totally different fashion. So I think that one also is a problem. Chairperson, my third point is that of transformation and gender balance. It is a problem. I'll talk about KZN because that is where I'm situated. You will find that it is very difficult for so-called black officers, junior officers and junior NCOs to move to the higher ranks. We do go to courses, they do some, they don't. But if you look at the level of progress in terms of junior NCOs and black junior officers, then it's a problem because you don't see them at the higher hierarchy. As well as the gender balance, the ladies, if you look at the whole structure of KZN reserve forces, there's a very shortage of ladies in ranks. Whether it be the junior officer or a senior officer, it becomes a problem. And I think the commission also needs to look at those things. And there's this issue of corruption and fraud that is happening. We've seen some of the things, like we find that, for instance, a tent, that you know that this tent is for the arm, but it is working elsewhere, where it is not supposed to be working. We see all those things, and we feel that some of these things, they are not looked at. And it needs the commission to take a closer look at those things so that it monitor everything that is happening within the unit. And also, there is a difference when it comes to working in terms of provinces. Now we find that in Pretoria, for instance, they will work, they will tell you that every month they are working 15 days every month. But you find that in KZN we work 10 days a year. Yet you are available, and they know that you are available. As I said it before, you find that I'm not working anywhere. I'm only relying on defense. Now we find that it's a problem because I'm working 10 days, but within the same unit, some of the people even end up finishing the 180 days. So that is why I say it is important that we introduce the policy that at least forces the unit to call up some of them, to call up the members, depending on their availability. The other point that I would like to raise is that of promotion. With regards to promotions, even when you've done the course, you've done everything, you've met the requirements, I don't know whether it's the formations or what is the problem, but there is a tendency that you spend too much time not being promoted, and it's not at the unit level, that one. I think we have a problem when you go up. I don't know what is the problem, but it takes very long for people to get promoted, and that is one of the reasons that you are currently facing. We also concerned about the another point. We are also concerned about the retraining and combat readiness of the reserve forces. I do believe that the government needs to invest vastly on the training of the reserve forces, because in the spirit of one force concept, we need to recognize that we also need training, the same training that is received by regular force members. My second last point is that of the sick bay. All right. The other one, Chairperson, is that of the sick base. You see, when for instance you go to a course, or we are deployed somewhere within the province, you'll find that when you go there, the sick bay is a reserve force member at the hospital of the different. They tell you that they cannot treat you because you are a reserve force member. Those things that we do have those problems when we go to situations, and you find that you get there, then they just tell you in your face that they cannot help you because you are a reserve force member. And that's where I begin to question the one force concept, because now it should be the same. It should be uniformity. And that goes for cards as well, military IDs. Most of the members, especially in KZN, we do not have those. And when the police come, they think that you are a criminal. You're having a camouflage, you're having the army equipment, but you have nothing to show for it. And it has been a problem that you've been encountering, because you end up getting searched. Every time you find that members are reporting that the police were at his house or her house, searching because now they find out that he is having a uniform. They end up calling their units and then find out and then they confirm. But it is embarrassing. Lastly, I believe that the reserve forces are capable of handling themselves, Chairperson. But that you will find, for instance, if there is I'm an engineer, you'll find that there is a project, say, in Jozin. They'll end up calling a unit maybe from Joburg or from Free State. While we are there, we are capable. We've been deploying, we've been exercising our knowledge, and we've achieved a lot. But now when it comes to the local operations, I do not think we are utilized as much as we could. That is all, unless my colleague wants to add something. I think that is all, Chairman.
Don't suppress the woman. One element of second.
Chairperson, I want to emphasize on young women and men like me. I'm a former MSD member. I've been trying to apply for SNDF as it was a passion to me. I applied 4 times. Then on the 4th time, I was taken. Due to my weight, I had to exercise. Then on the 4th year, I was taken. But
that must admit was the first one for me. I've